good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to Church Night here on the Malloy Program, as it is most Wednesdays. What is Church Night, you may ask, if you've never heard the program before? It is not pro-church. It is not pro-religion, because this program is run by a couple of full-blown atheists. But I was brought up in a fundamentalist Protestant milieu. That would have been my grandparents, who were Baptists, even though they were Italian immigrants. Quick conversion was necessary because they were afraid of what they were going to find in the United States, and rightly so. But anyway, I used to spend a lot of my time in the summer with my grandparents, and every Wednesday was prayer meeting night. Sundays was go to church morning, go to church evening. And Wednesday night, though, was the one that was fascinating to me because I didn't have to participate. As a matter of fact, I was not allowed to participate. This is where 10, 15, 20 adults would gather in the upper room of the church and have a prayer meeting. And this is rather old, an older congregation, and I don't remember other kids being brought to prayer meeting. I do remember kids in the Sunday school, but not to prayer meeting. It seemed like I was the only one. And I can remember those warm nights in that prayer meeting. And sometimes my grandmother would give me something to read. I don't remember what it was. Not the Bible. Probably some sort of a kid's book about God and Jesus and Adam and Eve. I used to look at those books of Adam and Eve, and I used to hate the fact there were leaves over their private parts. You know, I just wanted to see that, you know. Well, if they're naked! Anyway. So we do Wednesday night prayer, church night, in kind of for me to commemorate that time so long ago when I used to go to prayer meeting with my grandparents. In case you were wondering, that's what it's all about. I checked out the religion page at CNN.com. Yeah, they have one. They have a religion editor. And a question was asked on the internet, where was God in Aurora? Which I found sort of, you know, sort of weak and spongy, because you might say, where was God at Auschwitz? But of course, that question has been answered. So, as the CNN.com religion editor points out, the internet has become kind of the de facto global church for atheists and for agnostics and other doubters who obviously don't have bricks and mortar churches congregated, even though some of these right wing Christian crazies insist that, well, atheism's a religion. No, it isn't. No, it really isn't. Dan Gilgoff writes that we see this phenomenon in motion every day on the CNN Belief blog, where atheists, agnostics, humanists are among the most zealous commenters. A recent string of posts around the question of where was God in Aurora drew especially large waves of comments that show atheists are using the internet to commune with one another and to confront religious believers in ways that they don't usually do in church. Atheists and other secularists have offline organizations that stage in-person meetings. One of them is the Secular Student Alliance, which has seen its number of college campus chapters quadruple in the last 5 years to 368. But the internet is still probably the biggest player in the rise of the so-called new atheism. The movement's adherents evangelize their godlessness, just as many religious folks evangelize their God. Jesse Galef, communications director for the Secular Student Alliance, said, quote, a lot of millennials, you know, people born around the millennium, well, they call themselves millennials. They weren't born in the year 2000, but, you know. A lot of millennials who are coming of age have found that the internet is a fantastic place to talk about their doubt, Mr. Galef said. Before the internet, there was no place for young people to do that. The only place to go was really church, and that wasn't always a welcoming place. But they can go online and discuss these ideas without being judged by friends and families, end quote. Now, for closeted atheists, the internet's anonymity is a big draw. A coalition of national atheist groups recently launched a program to transition doubting clergy to lives of open atheism by first having ministers come out anonymously in a closed online community. So anyway, on Sunday, a guest piece from a Colorado pastor argued that it's possible to reconcile the idea of a sovereign God with the existence of evil and tragedy. And as of this morning, the Post had drawn 4,200 comments, largely from atheists. And one of those comments is a letter from God penned by an atheist commenter named Colin. And it's caught fire, to turn a phrase, online. And here's how the letter opens. This is just the first part. Listen to this. Dear Christians, God here. I thought I would take the time to personally explain my absence in the Aurora shootings. While I was at it, I thought I would also explain my absence during every murder, massacre, and crime that has ever taken place in world history, and in every war, and every famine, every drought, and every flood. You see, I don't exist. I never have. Did it really make sense to you that I would create an entire universe with billions and billions of planets and wait about 13,700,000,000 years just so I could focus on a few Jews from Palestine about 2,000 years ago while ignoring the rest of the 200 million people on the planet at the time? Did I make those Jews? Or did those few Jews make me? That's the end of that first part of it. The letter has been posted on Reddit, R-E-D-D-I-T, you're familiar with that, where it attracted another 1,000 comments. Now, CNN says, warning, the Reddit comments includes foul language. Oh, of course it does. Of course it does. People who are heavily invested in really insane belief systems are going to respond insanely when their belief system is challenged in the least. So I would imagine, I haven't been to that site yet, but anyway, CNN's religious, it's called the Belief Blog. If you want to find some interesting stories or interesting emails and letters, go there. There's a couple of emails, a couple of posts, damn it, say it right. This is from one of the posters. I grew up religious and decided to be agnostic as an undergraduate. Even though I'm now in my late 20s, I still feel slightly guilty because my parents tried to ram religion down my throat. My mom converted to my dad's religion. She went from Christianity to Islam right before having a double lung transplant in 1995. They are now super religious and attribute her miraculous recovery to her conversion. Reading posts like these remind me of how ridiculous religion is and help me relieve my guilt. Thank you to atheists. Here's another one. I like what Carl Sagan said about reassuring fables. He said, quote, the significance of our lives and our fragile planet is then determined only by our own wisdom and courage. We are the custodians of life's meaning. We long for a parent to care for us, to forgive us our errors, to save us from our childish mistakes. But knowledge is preferable to ignorance. Better by far to embrace the hard truth than a reassuring fable, end quote. And it goes on. There's some, very, like I said, there's some interesting blog posts, and some of them are, as you can imagine, evoke some pretty strong reaction. We'll be right back.
Lay all your weary troubles on us. is Mikey.
21 past the hour. Right after the next break, we'll have a moment with God about the time that, a moment with Bob, about the time that Bob scared Gore Vidal, which I think would be fitting given the fact that he passed away the other day. Oh, and by the way, anyone protesting drones, the drone aircraft or the remotely piloted aircraft, in upstate New York, got an email here from Sand. There's a website you can start at. I think this is mostly for upstate New York, but you can start with this, upstatedroneaction.org. upstatedroneaction.org. I don't know if, I forget if I mentioned it last week, there were several protesters who were arrested for protesting what goes on these military bases now that fly the remotely controlled aircraft and kill people. So if you want to check it out, upstatedroneaction.org. Okay. Okay. But this Chick-fil-A nonsense, I guess you are aware today was, you know, show your bigotry by buying a chicken sandwich. And these people are just goddamn insane. I just can't get my mind around this. According to the Associated Press, Chick-fil-A was overrun today by men, women, and children wanting chicken sandwiches and cross-cut fries. Make a stand for God! It's madness in this country. Just utter insanity. Crazy. Mike Huckabee, this Rupert Murdoch terror broadcast thug, declared today to be Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day. When in your lifetime, boys and girls, have you ever shown your appreciation to a company whose president stands for bigotry, hate, contempt, lies, religious nonsense?
Well, Mike, I didn't say any of that. I just said,
nah, shut up and sit down. Yes, you did say that. Huckabee urged Americans to show their appreciation for this bigotry with their wallets. Yes, God damn it, down with the queers. Ain't no queer ever going to get married in America. Buy a chicken sandwich. This is insanity. This is crazy. This is... The inmates have burst out of the asylum. Give me a chicken sandwich in the name of Jesus. Give me a chicken sandwich to stop the queers. Give me a chicken sandwich to let the world know that I'm having a heart attack. Give me a chicken sandwich because queers shouldn't get married. Give me some waffle fries. Give me one of them peach milkshakes. Amen, by God, amen. Ain't no queer ever going to get married as long as I can buy a chicken sandwich. You morons! You thick-headed, idiotic morons! Oh, my God! Some people lined up in the summer heat. Lines all around the building to get inside a store, while others waited in cars as far as the eye could see for a chance to place their order at the drive-through window. Hi, I'm a lard ass, and I'm here to stop the queers. Give me two chicken sandwiches. I'm going to eat here every day till either I die or we have a defense of marriage act. God damn it, marriage is under assault here. Give me a chicken sandwich. Give me another one. Dumbassery at its peak. People lined up to buy chicken sandwiches. Oh! I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. Buy waffle fries and support half-assed bigotry. It's just astonishing. Buy a peach milkshake. Get some chicken nuggets. I'm gonna stop the queers. This is my way of working against the homosexual agenda by buying chicken sandwiches. Did I say amen?
Man, this is really living.
Johnny?
Yeah?
When was the first time you heard a naughty word?
First time I heard a naughty word was when I was a child. I heard it from the chickens.
I'll be a cowboy, a Christian cowboy. I'll work for Jesus all my days. And on the prairie,
before the hour. This hour is being sponsored, by the way, by Diane in Kansas. Her message, hi, Mike, thanks for all you do. Thank you, Diane. All right, it is time once again for A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's moment, entitled I Scared Gore Vidal. As you know, Gore Vidal died in L.A. at the age of 86, I think yesterday. Hey, Mike. Living and working in L.A. was always pretty ugly, but starting in the early 80s, it became especially brutal. All the dirty effing hippies were out of a job, and the stupid swaggering Republicans who took over walked around like they owned the place, because they did. In the early 80s, nobody in the entertainment industry talked about making movies or records anymore. Now everyone made product. And if I wanted to work in the industry, I had better jettison any idea I might have about doing something good and wrap my head around cranking out the movie equivalent of Velveeta Cheese, the sequel. The balancing act of artistic vision versus making money created a dynamic that made for some pretty good movies, but accountants and lawyers found out you could make a whole lot more money if you threw away the script and just filmed the bottom line. Porky's made money, so crank out two more. Police Academy made money, shove out six more. A Nightmare on Elm Street made money, punch out nine more. Friday the 13th made money, extrude 12 more. A sleaze in a good suit told me if I ever wanted to make a movie again, to come up with something people had seen before and describe it like a TV guide listening. For example, Citizen Kane, 1941, 119 minutes, Orson Welles, Joseph Cotton. A man inherits a fortune, is raised by a bank, runs a newspaper, and dies thinking about his old sled. No way that project's ever going to get greenlighted. In between working on crap, I got a job at a cable TV company in Los Angeles. The cable industry was still fairly new, and there was a huge demand for product. If you were an HBO subscriber, you could watch Robin Williams in Popeye 27 times in 1 week. I wanted to work there because the public access division had cameras, editing equipment, and a studio for free. All I had to do was figure out what to put in front of the camera. I'd film commercials in the dead of night and sometimes was paid off in product in lieu of cash. How else do you think I got that wonderful portable dishwasher? During the day, the public access studio was used to produce must-see TV like The Jewish Television Network, which consisted of two bearded guys in black hats talking about current events with a Hasidic slant a couple of times a month. Two guys, two chairs, against a white wall. That was it. Some network. One morning, the studio was all abuzz. I noticed three chairs in the studio. The boys had a guest coming in. Imagine my jaw-dropping surprise when I saw Gore Vidal enter the room. What in the wide world of sports was he doing here? In 1982, Vidal was running against Governor Jerry Brown in the Democratic primary election for the United States Senate. Somehow, somebody on his staff thought it would be a good idea for him to be on the Jewish television network. I don't know what the two bearded, black-hatted guys expected from the man who had said, quote, I would stop all military aid to the Middle East. This would oblige the hardliners in Israel to make peace with the Palestinians. We have supported Israel for 40 years. No other minority in the history of the United States has ever extorted so much treasury money for its holy land as the Israeli lobby, end quote. One of our cameramen was a 23-year-old muscle-bound dimwit who once said he was sorry he was too young to have gone to Vietnam. Throughout the interview, I heard him muttering into his headset that this effing commie faggot shouldn't be on an effing, shouldn't be an effing senator, but should move back to the effing Russia. Direct quote. This was about Vidal. I don't know where he picked up his political views because he never read anything. He used to derisively call me the professor because I always had a book with me. He once said, as he was working himself up to throw a punch at me, that I didn't really know nothing because I read too much. Now, all this took place during a time when I wasn't drinking constantly. A guy has to sleep sometime. But I was drinking just enough to be somewhat oblivious to the effect of whatever I was saying had upon whoever I was talking to. Case in point, if you're drunk, but still drinking in a bar, seemingly getting along with all your bar buddies, do not turn to the drunk black guy next to you and describe Eddie Murphy as a black Bugs Bunny. Regardless of how cogent and apt your observation might seem to you at the time, there's a chance something bad will happen. But I digress. The interview was almost over. I suddenly remembered I had one of Vidal's books in my desk, and I wanted him to autograph it. Here's how the studio was laid out. The control room was actually a video truck in the back parking lot. I had to leave the truck, run down an alley to the street, enter the main building, run through the maze of cubicles, get to my desk, grab the book, run to the back of the main office area, open another door, and run down a long dark hallway to get to the door to the studio before Vidal left. That's a lot of running and a lot of territory to cover to get to Vidal in time. I was about halfway down the long, dark hallway when Vidal came out of the studio. I raced up to him, shoved the book at him, and asked him to sign it. He took it from me. His hands were trembling. As he scrawled his name, I asked him how the negotiations for the movie version of the book were going. He mumbled something about Mick Jagger being interested, fumbled the book back to me, and walked off. That was weird. He looked like a nervous wreck, when just minutes before he was calmly and effortlessly skewering the Jewish television network guys. What had happened to him? Well, just maybe he saw some wild-eyed, long-haired freak in a leather jacket running pell-mell straight for him down a long, dark, deserted hallway. The faint but perceptible bourbon-scented cloud enshrouding said wild-eyed, long-haired freak in a leather jacket probably didn't help Vidal's peace of mind either. And that's how I briefly met one of the best writers of all time. Rest in peace, Mr. Vidal. I'm sorry I scared you. Regards, Bob. Another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Now, wasn't that so much better than trying to say something appropriate around the passing of Gore Vidal? An awful lot has been said about that. This hour, by the way, is being sponsored by Diane in Kansas. Remember last night we had the guy call in about solar? Excuse me, solarroad.com. This is from Jerry. Jerry writes, Mike, as regards to solarroad.com caller last night, if you've been to the webpage, you already know there's nothing interesting there. I have no idea what the caller was talking about. Solar energy reaching Earth, called insolation, in the middle of a cloudless day in temperate latitudes is about 1 kilowatt per square meter. Photovoltaic technology is still on the order of 30% efficient, so that means a solar panel 1 meter by 1 meter provides about 300 watts of electricity at noon, less than one-half horsepower. Their lane markers are kind of cute, identical in principle to the solar power yard LED lights, but not necessarily more effective than the conventional reflector type responding to the 100-plus watt headlamps on your car. And a few cloudy days in a row means that they will emit no light at all on their own. Sorry to be a wet blanket, but that scheme of powering vehicles wouldn't even work on the planet Mercury. Cheers and keep it lit. Jerry. P.S. A 30-pound chunk of lead would be the baseball, not the bat. Clever analogy, though. Oh. Yeah, that's in reference to what I said about if you went to a game that was rigged. Hey, thanks, Jerry. Yeah, well, what do I know? I just listen to stuff, right? Scientific-sounding stuff, and I think, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. And then somebody like Jerry will take it apart a little bit and say, no, that's not really good science. That's... That's something else. What else do we have here? Oh, yeah. When we come back, two varying... You talk about synchronicity. One story is from Kansas City, Missouri. The other is from South Boston. And it both involves Catholic priests. Both stories. Both stories are dated today, August 1st. One is from the Associated Press, a story in Kansas City. One is from the Boston Herald, the story in Boston. The synchronicity of what happened here is, I don't know, it's so cosmic. It makes you consider that maybe there really is a supreme being. Or not. But I'll share them with you when we come back. Also, another anti-Obama tweet. This from an advisor to... what is a person who's described as Puerto Rico's most powerful female lawmaker. And, we had a climate science appeared today before a Senate committee hearing on climate change. And we'll talk about that a little bit, too. Miles to go before we sleep. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Substance, no abuse.
This hour has been sponsored by Diane in Kansas. Your message, hi Mike, thanks for all you do. Well, thanks for all you do, Diane, I appreciate it. It's 10 before the hour. From William in Hollywood, subject line, is that Chick-fil-A crap blessed by God like holy water? He writes, Mike, one of these fast food, junk food places cropped up a few blocks from here about a year ago, Chick-fil-A. The day it opened, they had clowns and freaks in the hot summer heat, and the next day, gays and lesbians surrounded the place protesting. It is not as large as some that I saw on television today, but what it does is clog up traffic because they have no parking. So the fools pouring into this place stall an entire lane of Sunset Boulevard, and they take up most of the Rite Aid drugstore's parking lot. So I laugh as I watch their cars being towed away. Sort of an expensive junk food feast for complete fools. I guess they think in their plugged-up minds that this chicken is blessed. and better, even though it comes from the same packed factories as most chicken does? William. Well, one gets one's entertainment where one can. There is something fun about watching people who are eating Chick-fil-A sandwiches have their cars towed away. Jesus, God. You know, and I was, you know, I have to plead ignorance again. I was totally unaware. I knew that Truett, Kathy, he's the old man who started this in, where? In Albany, Georgia? Is that where it started? I'm not sure. But I knew he was a Christian fundamentalist, but it was the only fast food place that we would allow Molly to indulge. And every time I went in there, I still felt guilty. And she would tell her friend, you know, she tells all her friends, well, my daddy won't let me go to McDonald's or Burger King or any of that. He won't? Boy, you have a terrible daddy. That's because he's so old. No, it's not because he's so old. It's because he doesn't want me to eat that stuff. But he does let me go to Chick-fil-A. So Molly's one toehold in the horrible world of fast food was Chick-fil-A, which has now been removed. And we told her why. We told her why, that we were never going to eat there again, and she was in perfect agreement. Now, it wasn't perfect agreement. She's 8, Mike. She's 8 years old. But, you know, she gets it. She's been immersed in our efforts at anti-bigotry for as long as she's been alive, so I guess some of it is washed off on her. And our attitudes toward Christians is not an example of bigotry. It's a matter of self-defense. You know, Christians will cut your goddamn throat and giggle while you bleed if you don't believe what they believe. And we're supposed to believe that the Muslims are the real violent ones. Yeah, right. Okay. But so now, no more Chick-fil-A. And in addition to the dumbassery that's been displayed by Truett Cathy's son, Dan Cathy, who's the CEO or the president or something of this chicken house, is also the fact of the nutritional, and I use that word advisedly, content that you find in a standard, you know, Chick-fil-A sandwich and order those horrific waffle fries that look like, you know what they remind me of? They remind me of the soles of boots used by the North Vietnamese. You know, they would cut tires off of vehicles that had been destroyed either by us or by them and use them to make shoes. That's what these waffle fries look like. I can't, every time I look at the waffle fries, I go, ah! Start thinking about Agent Orange and, you know, murder in Southeast Asia or whatever. But we would take her there. Maybe once every couple of weeks. And I don't know how many acts of contrition I have to do for that, but I'm sure that it'll be a handful. So no more of that either. It's just crazy. I guess it takes something like a religious, insane person to wake me up to the horrible content of these sandwiches. So I have to claim my mea culpa there about taking a healthy child who is very active into Chick-fil-A. No more. Kathy makes better fried chicken anyway. The synchronicity. A Kansas City priest accused of producing and possessing child pornography will plead guilty tomorrow to at least some of the federal charges he faces. The Reverend Sean Rattigan, 46, charged of 6 counts of production of child pornography, 2 counts of possession of child pornography, 5 counts of attempted production of child pornography. Production! Do you understand? Production. He's a priest. That's the story from Kansas City, from Boston. A South Boston priest who police said had images of girls who appeared to be as young as 8 on a computer at the parish rectory is being held on bail after he pled guilty, or not guilty, today to child pornography charges. Oh, no, not guilty at all. Just, you know, I'm examining them for signs of Satan. The Reverend Andrew Urbaniak, 39, pastor of Our Lady of, I can't say it, Roman Catholic Church on Dorchester, or is it Dorchester Avenue, was arrested following a two-month investigation, charged with possession, dissemination, child pornography. Following a two-month investigation, he's released on bail, order to wear a GPS bracelet, no contact with children under age 16, surrendered his passport. And he was using his computer to produce pornography. Oh, my God. So to speak. Stick around. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. This is the Malloy program. It is church night, as it is most Wednesdays. This hour is being sponsored by Chris in New York. Chris's message. This is a reminder to all truth seekers to sign up for a podcast subscription and sponsor an hour of this program. Thank you, Chris in New York, for the message and the sponsorship. Thank you very much. Andy Borowitz, as you know, now writes for The New Yorker. He had this in online today. Customers across the nation who turned out for Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day were in for a surprise as the chicken restaurant chose today to launch a new product, Hate Sauce. Delighted customers mobbed the restaurant to try the zesty new sauce, with many chicken fanciers ordering their sandwiches with extra hate. Said Harlan Dorenson, who sampled the sauce at Chick-fil-A in Orlando, quote, "It's so spicy it makes your mouth feel like it's on fire, like a gay couple in hell." But even as Chick-fil-A prepared to call its new hate sauce an instant hit, it faced a challenge from an upstart rival, Wing and Nuts. Wing and Nuts. The rival chain based in Falls Church, Virginia, chose today to introduce a new product targeting Chick-fil-A patrons, the Chicken Bacon Bigot Witch. Wing Nuts corporate spokesperson Carolyn Foyler said, quote, "We think we're going to take a big bite out of Chick-fil-A's customer base. Their founder is anti-gay, but ours is anti-gay, anti-immigrant, and anti-woman. When word gets out about that, there'll be lines around the block." Andy Borowitz at thenewyorker.com. Madness. Hate sauce, huh? It's just so true. I get too upset about these half-witted asswipes. I really do. I should take more of the Andy Borowitz approach, but I can't. I get crazy, you know, and I guess it's because of, you know, where I live in the South, in the Buckle of the Bible Belt. the anti-gay attitudes, even in the city of Atlanta, which has an enormous gay population. But the anti-gay attitudes, I can't understand this. There's so much I don't understand. I can't even, I won't even attempt. Climate. Yeah, it's been a long day, hasn't it, Kathy? Climate scientists. We were coming back from running errands today, and we pulled up at the post or at the mailbox at the top of the drive. And I was driving. I said, "Kathy, will you check the oil?" And she looked at me. I said, "Oh my God, no! Check the mail." So I meant to say climate scientists who appeared this morning before a Senate committee hearing on climate change and extreme weather impacts. They had some pretty strong warnings for the lawmakers. You can find this at Common Dreams. And what they told the lawmakers, if you missed it on your electric TV, climate change is here. Climate change is man-made. Climate change is going to cost us big time. Dr. James McCarthy, professor at Harvard University, lead author of several climate impact studies by the IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and other international papers, told the committee that, quote, "there is widespread agreement among specialists who devote their careers to monitoring key indicators of global warming." End quote. He acknowledged that, of course, climates fluctuate on a yearly basis, but that the mounting evidence of a warming world was changing the baseline of those fluctuations. He said, in the future, as greenhouse gases continue to increase, natural events like El Nino cycles will wreak even more havoc as they break old records for warm and wet conditions across much of the globe, because they will be occurring upon a higher baseline of warming. That is just impossible for right-wingers, Christian fundamentalists, and conservatives to understand. Sitting in that room, Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe said, quote, he told the committee in opening statements, quote, "the global warming movement has collapsed." Jesus. I don't know. That's when I start to feel that my violence gene starting to stir. Usually I keep it fairly well sedated. I keep it down in the lizard section of my prehistoric brain. Or pre-human brain, but every time I see Inhofe or he opens his mouth, I can feel it start to move. Where does it sleep, Kathy? In my amygdala? Is that where the murder vein, that little gene inside of me that just wants to go medieval on him? Really? I try to keep it in check, but anyway. Dr. McCarthy's colleague and climate scientist at Stanford University. What do we got here? Harvard and Stanford so far. Dr. Christopher Fields said these events will have an increasingly strong impact on communities. He said, quote, "understanding the role of climate change in the risk of extremes is one of the most active areas of climate science. As a result of rapid progress over the last few years, it's now feasible to quantify the way that climate change alters the risk of certain events or series of events," end quote.
What? What'd he say? What the hell's he saying? Is that in the Bible?
Giving examples and citing studies to back them up, he continued, quote, "climate change at least doubled the risk of the European heat wave of 2003. A high-impact extreme that led to tens of thousands of premature deaths, especially among the elderly or infirm. On the other hand, there is no evidence that climate change played a role in the serious flooding in Thailand in 2011. The primary causal agent there was altered land management. For the 2011 Texas drought, La Nina, which is cold water in the eastern Pacific, played a role. But recent research by Daniel Rupp and colleagues concludes that in a La Nina period, extreme heat is now 20 times more likely than in the 1960s, end quote. See, they just keep flooding the public record with scientific study after scientific study. They're comprehensive, they're well-researched, they use statistical models. And I know Mark Twain said they're lies, damn lies, and statistics. But these are statistical models that are put together in a far different way from the way they were put together in Mark Twain's time, if you understand what I'm saying there. Anyway, Dr. Fields went on to say, there's no doubt the climate has changed. There is also no doubt that a changing climate changes the risks of extremes, including extremes that can lead to disaster. And, of course, despite all of this evidence, Inhofe was unwavering in his denial of the scientific community's findings. In his prepared opening remarks, Inhofe said, the global warming movement has completely collapsed. What drove the collapse, he argued, was that the science of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change was finally exposed. It's not a scientific body, it's a political body. See, there, I can feel it stirring again. I mean, just seeing Inhofe's name in print, it just, I don't know. Let's take a break, Kathy, so I can try to calm this murder gene down. I've had a hard time with this one lately.
But no one took the plane from coast to coast to Washington.
America, one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So, a brief hearing in front of the Senate this morning about the science and the reality and the factual research that is being done. It's very frustrating to me. On the one hand, you have these sick right-wing, most of them religious freaks who simply deny what's staring the entire human race, the entire planet, right in the face. On the other hand, you have the scientists who, or on the other side, I should say, you have the scientists who continue to pump out scientific evidence that this catastrophic event is swelling up around us in much the same way as some of those videos from the tsunami that hit Indonesia. Remember those from a couple of years ago? You could see a monster wave developing and people still in the water, and all of a sudden it got their attention and they just stood there and stared at it. Of course, you and I knew that within seconds they would be battered corpses. That's a feeling I get. We have politicians, mostly right-wingers, but a lot of Democrats, of course, most of them are right-wingers too, denying all this or mouthing platitudes about it, in the best of circumstances, and on the other side, the scientists who just continue to put the material out there. There's a third energy point regarding this issue, and that's coming from those people who are trying their best to mobilize the population, because the politicians are going to do nothing. The scientists can do nothing. So that leaves human beings who might be willing to make an attempt to convince our fellows that this has to be stopped. From Don, Mike, did you know that NASA's top climate scientist, the fellow who first warned Congress about global warming back in 1988, Jim Hansen, has been arrested 3 times for peaceful protests during the Obama administration. Talk about a scientist hero and a presidential louse. The last 2 protests were against mountaintop removal. You know, the coal mining that is helping to kill us with greenhouse gases. And by the way, regarding Rich Mueller, the Cornell study last year demonstrated that natural gas fracking is even worse than coal in terms of its greenhouse gas footprint. MIT study, the most comprehensive climate modeling to date, done in 2009, a middle case scenario for global warming by 2100. On the present course, at least 5.2 degrees Celsius rise. That's the prediction. Now, estimated temperature rise during the Permian Great Extinction 252 million years ago, which was the worst of the planet's mass extinctions. It included 96% of marine life, 70% of terrestrial vertebrates, and even most of the insects, all went extinct. Partial biodiversity recovery took 10 million years. Full biodiversity recovery took 20 million years. Well, the temperature rise during the Permian Great Extinction, 6 degrees centigrade at the equator, 8 degrees or Celsius during at the equator, 8 degrees Celsius near the poles. The MIT study predicts 5.2 degrees Celsius rise by the year 2100. Or, Don goes on, looking in the opposite direction, mean global temperature drop during the last ice age when the Laurentide ice sheet in North America was up to 2 miles thick, 5 degrees Celsius temperature drop. The intricate balance of climate systems and ecosystems vulnerable to powerful feedback loops is perhaps the single most important fact in the zillions of facts about this planet. It's astounding how few people realize it. If we're not careful, we humans will get a mass lesson the extremely hard way. Don. Well, the people most responsible right now for making the hard decisions will tell you that God promised that he wouldn't what? I don't know. I don't know what these sick bastards say. We'll return after the break. Do stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
You shed on that day won't wash your sins.
Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Chris in New York, whose message is, this is a reminder to all truth seekers to sign up for a podcast subscription and sponsor an hour of the program. Thanks, Chris. Don sent me an excerpt from a speech. Chomsky's latest regarding climate change. I want to share it with you. This is Noam Chomsky. It should be unnecessary to dwell on the extreme dangers posed by one of the central elements of the predatory obsessions that are producing calamities all over the world, the reliance on fossil fuels, which courts global disaster, perhaps in the not-too-distant future. Details may be debated, but there is little serious doubt that the problems are serious, if not awesome, and that the longer we delay in addressing them, the more awful will be the legacy left to generations to come. There are some efforts to face reality, but they are far too minimal. The recent Rio Plus 20 conference opened with meager aspirations and derisory outcomes. Meanwhile, power concentrations are charging in the opposite direction, led by the richest and most powerful country in world history. Congressional Republicans are dismantling the limited environmental protections initiated by Richard Nixon, who, by the way, would be something of a dangerous radical in today's political scene. The major business lobbies openly announce their propaganda campaigns to convince the public that there is no need for undue concern, with some effect, as polls show. The media cooperate by not even reporting the increasingly dire forecasts of international agencies and even the U.S. Department of Energy. The standard presentation is a debate between alarmists and skeptics. On one side, virtually all qualified scientists. On the other, a few holdouts. Not part of the debate, and a very large number of experts, including the climate change program at MIT, among others, who criticize the scientific consensus because it is too conservative and cautious, arguing that the truth when it comes to climate change is far more dire. Not surprisingly, the public is confused. In his State of the Union speech in January, President Obama hailed the bright prospects of a century of energy self-sufficiency, thanks to new technologies that permit extraction of hydrocarbons from Canadian tar sands, shale, and other previously inaccessible sources. Others agree. The Financial Times forecasts a century of energy independence for the U.S. The report does mention the destructive local impact of the new methods. Unasked in these optimistic forecasts is the question, what kind of a world will survive this rapacious onslaught? In the lead in confronting the crisis throughout the world are indigenous communities, those who have always upheld the Charter of the Forests. The strongest stand has been taken by the one country they govern, Bolivia, the poorest country in South America, and for centuries a victim of Western destruction for the rich resources of one of the most advanced of the developed societies in the hemisphere, pre-Columbus. After the ignominious collapse of the Copenhagen Global Climate Change Summit in 2009, Bolivia organized a people's summit with 35,000 participants from 140 countries, not just representatives of governments, but also civil society and activists. It produced a people's agreement, which called for a very sharp reduction in emissions and a universal declaration on the rights of Mother Earth. That is a key demand of indigenous communities all over the world. It is ridiculed by sophisticated Westerners, but unless we can acquire some of their sensibility, they are likely to have the last laugh, a laugh of grim despair. And Don adds, to me it boils down to this. Keep atmospheric CO2 under 450 parts per million and work on getting it back to 350 parts per million just as soon as technologically and economically possible. In other words, without starving half the planet. As recommended by Hansen and the rest, keep the overall temperature rise to 2 degrees Celsius or not much above it. Even the International Energy Agency, historically not exactly climate change alarm central, now says that if we don't change course by 2017, climate change will be, quote, irreversible, end quote. Another thing, declare international and national states of emergency. Potential loss of a world this century. Yeah, that's an emergency, methinks. Another, institute mandatory carbon taxes and carbon rationing throughout the entire industrialized world. Good news, there would be more socioeconomic justice. Bad news, most or all of us are going to take a major blow to our lifestyles. Begin enormous alternative energy projects and infrastructure development. The good news, lots and lots of new jobs. Even better news, we begin weaning ourselves off suicidal fossil fuels. The best news, we have at least a chance of saving this beautiful planet that we all claim to love so much. And just remember this, we're only as far from the year 2100 as we are from the publication of Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby in the opposite direction. On our present course, in other words, without major changes, I don't think we even get anywhere close to 2100. By the way, Senator Inhofe has taken over $1 million in money from the fossil fuel industry, and that was some years ago. I don't know what the bribery number is up to now. Done. So the rather dry presentation, part of a larger speech by Noam Chomsky. You know, if you want flash and emotion, you don't go to a Chomsky presentation. It's always very subdued, very quiet. And for me anyway, as a result of that, scary as hell. Right? I mean, who scares you more? Somebody who presents a very grim truth in a very slow, well, not necessarily slow, but a very calculated and deliberate way, or someone like moi who gets on the radio and screams and froths and rants and raves. Who is more scary? Right. The one who delivers things in a measured, controlled way. What you hear on this program is not, to arms, the British are coming, to arms, the British are coming. You don't hear that here. What you hear is, I'm going out of my goddamn mind! That's what you hear. I can't take it anymore! Would that it were a little bit different, but it isn't. From the New York Times, last month the State Department formally invited public comment on the issue it should, on the issues that should be under consideration in a new environmental assessment of the Keystone XL pipeline. That's the monster that would connect the Alberta, Canada oil sands to an existing pipeline in Nebraska and then wind up in Texas. The review process was triggered when TransCanada filed a new pipeline application after its first proposal was rejected by President Obama in January. The State Department's first environmental assessment was grossly inadequate. One of the main reasons Obama rejected the proposal. The State Department is trying to do a better job this time. It will almost certainly ask all the right questions about the impact of the pipeline on the United States, what it means for our soil, our water, our species, our cultural resources, and our jobs. Times you left off our planet. What is less certain is whether it will ask an essential global question that transcends borders. What is the pipeline's likely effect on the climate? The answer to that question may not determine the State Department's recommendation about whether the pipeline should be built or Mr. Obama's decision if he is reelected. Mitt Romney has already said he would approve the pipeline. Nor will America's decision stop Canada's development of the tar sands or the sale of its oil elsewhere in the world. but the climate question must be addressed, if only to give a full accounting of the range of consequences of developing the tar sands, an effort in which the United States will be complicit if it allows the pipeline. That includes the effect of destroying 740,000 acres of boreal forest, the carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases emitted in extracting the oil from the tar sands, and the gases emitted by burning the oil. The point was reinforced this month when 10 leading climate scientists sent a letter to Hillary Rodham Clinton asking the State Department to consider how helping to open Canada's tar sands would affect the planet's climate. We hope, the Times concludes, that the State Department is rigorous in addressing all relevant questions. We'll be back.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Chris in New York. And he sends it as a reminder to all truth seekers to sign up for a podcast subscription or sponsor an hour of the program. Thank you, Chris. You know, we've been talking about this horrific event of global warming, global heating, for a number of nights now. And what I have found, of course, is what I think a lot of people, when you are faced with a problem that is or a calamitous event that's heading your way that is just enormous, other than your own death, there are only a few ways to deal with it, and I don't have the studies or the papers written about this in front of me, written by the social scientists or the psychologists, psychiatrists, but I do know that part of that handling, so to speak, of something this horrific is just complete avoidance. Just, no, I won't think about it. Now, that applies, it does apply on a personal level, too. We've all been faced with things that usually something, maybe a matter regarding illness, that seems too big to handle in the moment. You know, eventually, of course, we do have to handle it, but we do have to confront it and deal with it on some psychological level. Or emotional level. But what I've discovered in talking about this now for a number of nights is that it is just too big. Let's just go with the simple words, Mike. Come on. It's too big for me to deal with. And the reaction I have in reading the articles and some of the papers that are written in a less technical language than scientist to scientist, something more like that common folk like I can understand, it is unnerving on the one hand. It reads like science fiction to me on the other. I mean, I grew up in the 50s and watched all those science fiction movies. You know, War of the Worlds and Invasion from This and even Steve McQueen's The Blob. All of this, all those science fiction movies, of course, we didn't realize at the time, I don't think we did, that those science fiction movies, those Invasion from Mars movies, were to prepare us for war with the Soviet Union. That was the psychological subtext. But this is not that. You know, this is something entirely different. When I say, to me, it feels like or reads like the treatment for a movie on, you know, a disaster movie or invasion from outer space or something that is just impossible to handle. And I don't think any issue has ever made me feel so impotent as this one. The issues of poverty, I know, are manageable. The issues of ending war, I know, are manageable. Maybe not by us now, but they are manageable. The issues of ignorance are manageable. They seem to have a shape to them, those issues, that if we got serious, we could solve them. Ignorance, poverty, hunger, religious nonsense. But this issue of planetary climate change, this issue, this is the one that to me keeps whispering in my ear, I cannot be solved. And being a parent and a grandparent, and even if I weren't, being an uncle or being a cousin or just being aware that there are children, little kids right now, you know, I've got one who, you know, running around just doing little kid things, who don't understand and couldn't possibly conceive. Just like those little kids on the beach in Indonesia as this monster wave was just seconds away from ending them. And I see the kid when Kathy takes Molly to school in the mornings during school term, I pick her up. And I pick Molly up sometimes, and the school, you know, erupts with all these little kids come pouring out, and I can't help it. I look at them and I think, oh my God. And that's just one little elementary school with 400 or 500 students. Just one. And the feeling of catastrophe and fear and impotence and good God, what have we done? And why doesn't the leadership class on this planet, whether it is political or economic or religious or whatever it is, whatever sort of leadership is left, why doesn't it lead us away from this horror? That's just over the horizon. It's not even over the horizon anymore. You can see its fingertips over the horizon. You know, it's starting to pull itself up where we can see its whole grotesque reality. And I it's difficult to deal with this one. Your phone calls when we come back after this break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is a Malloy program. If you will indulge me just for a moment here. This is August 1st. It is the... It is the midway point between summer solstice and the autumnal equinox. And in the Celtic wheel of the year, this time marks the beginning of the harvest season. And the harvest, referred to as Lunasa or Lammas, is the first of three harvest festivals. Traditionally, this is the time the grains have been harvested and the first bread from the new crop is baked and offered to the Earth Mother, the goddess, in gratitude for her bounty. This season of harvest is, in fact, all about gratitude. The seeds we kept safe through the winter, carefully tucked into fertile earth in the spring, nurtured, watered, and weeded through the summer, are now bearing fruit that will feed us through the winter to come. The harvest season is also a time of letting go, recognizing which seeds failed to sprout or bear the fruit we had all hoped, and returning to the compost pile, the dried stalks that remain after we harvest the fruit. If all this sounds like a metaphor for our lives, well, it is. Our ancestors knew their lives were connected to the cycles of the earth. From whatever continent our lineage hails, our genetic memory carries the harmony and flow of the seasons. In our so-called modern world, our conscious minds often ignore these shifts, but our bodies and our spirits remember. When we take a moment to honor the ancient patterns that flow through us, it helps to balance all the worlds we walk in. So take a moment to sway like a stalk of grain in the silver light of the full moon. Let your heart be a basket in which to gather what you have planted this year and brought to harvest, and acknowledge those things still growing in your garden that have yet to bear fruit. Make an offering to the Earth Mother as thanks for her help in the growing and for keeping you tuned to the wheel of life. Tomorrow, revel in the warmth and the sun, because this is only the first of the harvest festivals. The time of frost is still a long ways away. Bridget Wolfe wrote that. It's at fairywoodland.com. Thanks, Bridget. See, that's what I want to talk about. That's what I want to talk about. And Bridget had a couple of references to Celtic mythology in that little piece, i.e. fairies and wee folk, that I left out in order to get the, not be diverted from what she was saying. A lot of people would get diverted. We don't in this house, because we have a lot of Bridget and her husband John's artwork, the fairy houses. Go to the website if you really want to see something that'll blow your mind. Go to fairywoodland.com. Oh, woo! So, Jeremy in Burlington, Vermont writes to me and to Bob Kincaid. He writes, "Dear Mike and Bob, I thought it would be noteworthy to mention that the uprising against the Alberta tar sands pipeline reached our little city of Burlington, Vermont this past Sunday. And like a lot of other protests that we've all seen in the past year, pepper spray was used on protesters. The police claimed the use of force was within their policies. Yet they also commented that some of the protesters were carrying milk to combat the pepper spray, yet another sign of the downfall of Western society." Jeremy in Burlington, Vermont. Yeah, so... August 1st festival. For those of you who keep track of those things. Does anybody anymore? I mean, you know, other than... other than Bridget. Okay, I'm drifting too far afield here. Back to, well, your phone calls. The number here is 877-996-2556. Jim is in Las Vegas, listening on Sirius. Hi, Jim.
How are you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Another great show, man. You just do one great show after another.
You're right.
But anyway, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
I was watching Chris Matthews earlier tonight, and he did a little tribute to a fallen friend, one of the greatest writers of the I'd say mm-hmm. 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And I just find it, but then he starts. I just remember him pushing his book about JFK and all that stuff. You know what I mean? You know, he's talking about Garvey Dahl, and then a couple months later, he's talking about he's just all over the place.
You're talking about Vidal being all over the place?
No. Chris Matthews.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, Mr. One Gun Theory stuff and all that. Yeah, that's his policy. Is he?
Okay, now I know there's a point in here someplace, right? There's a point.
Right.
A point to what you're saying.
Right.
Okay, you want to share that with us real quick here?
All right. So the point is that he pays tribute to Garvey Dahl,
mm-hmm.
just like I noticed a couple of other people on
right
national media.
Right.
They did, but then they just kind of blown aside with what his real point was, which is pretty much in kind of like the same point you're trying to point out.
Well, I think I understand what you're saying. Of course, I don't, you know, it, I know you're not doing this, but a comparison between Gore Vidal and me is like a comparison between water and muddy water and the best champagne on earth. Hey, Jim, listen, thanks. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care, pal. Dave is in Portland, listening online. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi, Mike. I just wanted to. I have a few things on my agenda.
Sure.
But number one, I wanted to apologize to you in person, face to face, or over the phone at least. Hey, I was sorry if I, you know, insulted you. And I've been going through some big changes lately. You wrote me a flame a little while back, and I just was real sorry, and I my humblest apologies to you because I was wrong. The thing is that I've been trying to figure out the changes I've been going through. Is trying to figure out how to communicate to these people on the other side.
Hey, can you hold on a second, Dave? Let me do a couple of commercials here, and we'll be right back.
Oh,
go to bed angry. Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Okay, back to Dave in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, hi.
Hey.
Are you there?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, as I was saying, you know, I think we could all discuss the what's going on and the consequences of global warming, but that's all kind of fact. I mean, it's coming out now to the point where I think, you know, my problem was, I mean, I think and reason, and I believe you think and reason the same. I mean, if something is, if it's 112 degrees outside, something's going on. Yeah, unless it's, you know, one day a year or something like that. But I try to, I've been going through these changes, trying to figure out how to communicate with people. And sometimes, you know, it's like I talk to people on the other side sometimes, and it's like I'm talking to a bug or a cat or something. Well, my cats actually have more understanding.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they know when it's time to eat. I just whistle, and they're trained, and they, you know, they,
right,
their Pavlov effect works. But I think that the language that we use, it's like these people don't care about reason.
No.
They do. But fear works. Fear works. And sometimes, you know, people have to just, they're like, sometimes people like alcoholics have to just come to like this moment of clarity where they say, oh my God, I am going to die. You know, I mean, I am going to, and they're doubled over in pain or whatever. Reality sets in. I mean, it's like Nancy never cared about stem cell research until, it came home, you know, and Ronald Reagan got Alzheimer's. And it's like these people are very selfish, and they live on fear. And so if anybody tries to communicate with them, you have to communicate in the language of fear and just say, you know, if I talk to an old teabagger or something, I just say, hey, you know, they're going to be taking your Social Security. You got to read that Ryan's plan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what's going to happen.
Right.
And they're going to say, if I talk to a gun guy, I'm saying, you know, it's not the Democrats who are going to take a gun. You know who it is, buddy. It's the right wingers.
Mm-hmm.
They did the gun grab in New Orleans. They'll take your guns faster than you can, you know. Whatever they say is the opposite of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, give me a break.
Yeah.
I don't even bother arguing reason with them because it's like I'm talking Greek and they, mm-hmm. they're not going to respond to that. There's no way. But I mean, I feel real lucky being here in the Northwest because the weather is just so beautiful here right now. It was like supposed to be 95 on Saturday, but that's the first day over 90 we've had all year. You know, but I mean, I know what's going on, and I'm scared, and I know you're scared, and I empathize with your fear. And it's just like I heard that guy talking last week on your show from North Carolina or whatever. He can't even ride his bike.
Mm-hmm.
That's sick. I'm just, you know, I'm really angry about it, but I want to do something about it. And that's, you got to just put the fear in other people. That's all it is. If somebody is not in the state of fear right now, they need to be put in the state of fear. And or they need to be, if you can't get them on that, get them on something else. To tell them, hey, you know, they're going to raise our taxes too. That's a fact. You know, Romney's plan is to raise taxes on all of us.
Well,
like you said last night.
Yeah, but again, Dave, what you come up against is avoidance and denial. You can go up against a Christian fundamentalist with all the facts that are saturated in fear that you want to, and it won't work. Simply because they, you know, they have the answer. And the answer is, well, you know, the rapture is coming, and I'm going to heaven anyway because I'm saved. Are you going to heaven? You're not saved? Well, then you're going to burn in hell. I mean, there is no way to reach people who are involved in a death cult at all. You simply cannot reach them. You can't reach them with anything. Not with a fear. There isn't. There's nothing that motivates them to do anything because they already have all the answers. It's all part of their demonic God's plan. Haven't you ever heard that before? This is all part of God's plan. I'm not going to worry about it.
They have a thirst for apocalyptic violence.
Right.
I know what that's all about. But the thing is that when it really comes home, I mean, I got a cousin who's a born-again Christian from my crazy side of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got two of them, actually. And their two other siblings are alcoholics. And one's a Wiccan witch and the other one's an alcoholic. But anyway, it was from their father that insanity is hereditary.
You have an interesting family.
Yeah, well, I talk to him sometimes, and, you know, we haven't talked in about 2.5 years, but he lives in Colorado Springs,
mm-hmm.
and I love him, and I'm real sorry about what happened over there. I mean, I don't know if his house burned to the ground or whatever, but when reality comes home, it's like, yeah, it's being doubled over with a pain in your belly. I mean, if your house is burned to the ground, you say to yourself, well, it's 100 degrees for 10 days. I think a lot of people in the Midwest, I think the same thing happened in the last Depression.
We're flat out of time here. I'm going to have to move on. But, you know, one thing to tell people who wind up with their houses smashed with hurricanes or their businesses burned down is just to mention, well, not to worry. It's part of God's plan. Talk to you later, Dave. Thanks.
Well, this is evident, yeah. In the American way, you must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and what's just. Because I want.
He hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. John is in Torrance, California, listening online. Hello, John.
How you doing, Mike? I wanted to touch base on your feelings of despair and lack of control on this big issue of global warming.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way you do. Little younger than you, but not by much. All I can say is batten down the hatches because this is going to end badly for the following reason. Of course, the human species has the ability to resolve these problems, like you and I know. But there's something else behind all of it that is preventing us from doing it. It's the same mechanism that allows us to be so creative as human beings. It's also the same mechanism that makes us such horrible monsters. And that has to do with our ability to, well, the reference point is scapegoating is the way that most people think about it. But it's called mimesis, and it's a biological function in our brain where they called mirror neurons. They've discovered them here in the last 20 years or so. And it's how we learn, but it's also how we end up also propagating violence upon one another. And all religion, culture, society that has been growing over the thousands of years since men wanted the earth as tribal people, as we evolved, as our brains evolved, we took an evolutionary leap, and when we did, We created this condition that we have, and it's unique to human beings, and we've been struggling with forever. And so we're kind of coming to the end of it, where the only way we're going to end up badly, either destroying ourselves because of what we have available to us, like biological weapons, nuclear weapons, all this kind of stuff
mm-hmm.
that we've created, is going to annihilate us. Or else we're going to need some sort of outside help, whether or not there's a Jesus or not that returns, or an alien comes down, or we have an evolutionary leap in our consciousness, is the only way that we're going to probably survive the situation. Because there's no way to stop it, because the polarity and the polarization that's taking place now have been growing and escalating, and this process is a natural process. The ancient people of long ago, when they had the sacrificial system and religion, even law is a process to control unmitigated violence. And this is a mechanism that is fundamental to the human condition that's been ongoing since our evolutionary process took us to be sentient beings. And we've struggled with that for, you know, tens of thousands of years and have found ways to mitigate it. But because the population is so large and we have had created such hideous weapons and all kinds of, we have the potential to get ourselves out of it, but it's just that this mechanism, unless there's something that can come in and break us of this polarization that's going to just accelerate. You see it at the government level. You see it now as pressure for the economy is coming on board. You see it in government. You see it all the way down to even at work. I see it because it occurs at an individual level. And when this process takes place, you get lynching. I mean, you get the rabid mob coalescing around an individual in order to scapegoat them in order to bring some kind of a peace or unity among everyone. They don't kill each other. And so either something like that's going to take place. So if they end up badly, whether or not we sacrifice a whole nation and we come to our senses finally and do something about it, if we haven't polluted ourselves completely, it's too late.
Well, I hope, my hope, John, and John, thanks for the observations and comments. My hope is that that we don't, And I do still have hope that we don't plunge over the edge of the abyss. That's about all that I've got left is that little bit of hope, because to the extent that I have taken a look at from my little corner of the universe, taken a look at the human condition or tried to understand it and tried to get a handle on historical perspectives and how we got to this point. And the horrifically destructive force of right-wing political belief systems, no matter when or where, no matter what it was called, if it was from the right, a fascist kind of attitude, or from religion, another form of fascism, and none of that has ever succeeded in doing anything but further our destruction. And this is the part I don't understand why people don't see, that religion does not save your soul or follow the precepts of whatever avatars they think they have, spokespeople from God, spokesmen from God. It never brings peace. It never brings justice. It never brings equilibrium. It brings the opposite of all three of those. That's what religion does. And right wing, the fascism of religion and the fascism of right wing politics does the same thing politically. I see the continuation of the refusal to acknowledge what we're facing here on a planetary basis. I see that as a direct consequence of right-wing political ideas and religious fascism. And I can't see it any other way. I just can't. I mean, I've tried. I've tried to think, okay, well, come on, Mike. let's set aside your biases, your personal biases. And I've tried. And I don't call them biases anymore. I just take a look. If 2 + 2 = 4, unless I've got somebody jolting me with electricity, it's going to stay 2 + 2 = 4 forever. I mean, it just is. And not because I declare it as such. Now, someone may try to get me to say that they're holding up 5 fingers when I know goddamn good and well they're only holding up 3. But with the right amount of pressure, I guess I'll see 5. But this, I just don't understand. On a rational basis, why political fascism and religious fascism is so hell-bent on destroying everything. Unless political right-wingers and religious fundamentalists are of a different species of human that do not care, that don't have that essential self-preservation gene, the survival gene. I realize that genetic structure can cause wars and destruction, but it also, ultimately, doesn't it, bring about an end to destruction. Once the brain gets to the point, or the consciousness gets to a point where people understand, well, if I continue this behavior, I'm going to destroy myself. Oops, can't do that. But that doesn't seem to have clicked in. That's the part that's driving me mad. Now, I know that the rigid religious crazy people have this weird goddamn place they call heaven or paradise or whatever that's over there, out there somewhere. I mean, it's just madness. And I know that the political right-wing fascists don't believe anything scientific. So here I am. In my little paranoid world, and I know you feel the same way, Truth Seeker, you're not part of that religious nuttery, and you're not part of the political fascism. So you're sitting here going, yeah, but how do I fight both of these monsters that are hell-bent on destroying everything? And I troll for a response from the right wingers where I'm not going to talk to you on the air because you turned my stomach. But if you want to send me an email as justifying your religious craziness or your political craziness, if you want to send me any kind of a screed that justifies what you are doing And your determination to destroy everything, I'd love to read it. I'd love to see how you justify this insanity. And it is insane to believe that some sky spook is sitting up there, this butchering, bloody, insane, mad godhead that you all have created. And somehow he's going to show compassion on your miserable ass? Are you serious? This is a God that has devoured millions and done so gleefully. It, you know, in your belief system. I mean, he started doing this immediately after you created him, just wiping out entire populations in the Middle East. Kill them all! How do you... I don't know. Let's take a break. If you're on hold, stick around. I'm going to try to get your phone call. Stick around. Thank you very much. Gil is in Charlotte, North Carolina, listening on XM. Hi, Gil.
How you doing? I'm one of them right-winger and bastard teabaggers, so I just thought I'd preface.
What?
I just thought I'd preface that I'm one of those bastards on the right, so get it out of the way. But today, you know, you had the whole thing with Chick-fil-A, with the saying from their CEO, that today it was just more of a, let's move forward and say, look, we're going to support you, that you have the right to say what you said.
Wait a second. Why? Why are you calling this program? I don't quite understand.
Get it out of the way.
Get it out of the way? Okay, well, consider it out of the way. What the hell? You shouldn't drink and drive, sir.
If I can elucidate, which I probably can't, but he had said that he thought that there was some hypocrisy because members of the Black Caucus were meeting with Chick-fil-A executives.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like everyone's schizophrenic.
Don't you love the way right wing, and he identified himself as a right wing bastard. Don't you love the way the right wing bastards can spot hypocrisy a million miles away, but if they look in the mirror, it completely eludes them? I mean, that's another amazing aspect of right wing dumbassery to me, whether it is political or religious. You know, they can see it more quickly than they can see a rainbow or a baby giggling or a kid playing or a righteous action between two men or two women or a man and a woman. Before they can see any of that, before they can see their own God's blessings, before they can acknowledge their own humanity, by God, they can spot hypocrisy. Ooh, did you hear about the Black Caucus? We're sitting down with the Chick-fil-A people. What do you think of that, liberal? Jesus God. What do I think of it? Well, like I've always said, it's crackers, the slipper, Oscar, the dropsy, and snide. Always has been, always will be. Tom is in Bullhead City, Arizona.
Why do you have to say it like that?
Bullhead City. Yeah. Wait, I can't. You're hard to hear tonight. Now, calm down. Talk into your microphone.
Well, basically, I wanted to change the subject. I think that the fix is in with Mitt Romney. I think that we need to get our heads together about what we're going to do next.
Wait a minute. What? Who's going to do next?
We don't like Mitt Romney, right?
We'll ignore him.
No, we cannot ignore him. He will be president.
No, he's not.
He will be president. There's nothing we can do.
No, there's no way in hell that Mitt Romney is going to be president. No way in hell.
Mike, I love you, man. I've been following you. I follow you up and down.
Mitt Romney is not going to be president, Tom.
Did you hear that idiot that called you? There's a whole bunch of them.
So what?
Our people ain't going to count because they're going to suppress their votes. I was in the electronic voting thing. I was an election official in Bullhead City, Arizona, in Riviera.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you that at the church on Marina where we have held our elections, okay,
mm-hmm.
it's Riviera. Riviera Baptist Church on Marina. It does not have internet connection, and they have dipole machines, and the votes do not get counted. It doesn't really matter because everybody is Republican anyway.
Right. Okay. Well, Tom, listen. Wait a second. We may, in the first place, Mitt Romney is not going to be elected president of the United States. There is no way, and the force, the matrix, they're not going to be able to steal the election. It's just the potential, the possibility exists, but it's not going to happen. The religious crazies at the last minute, the Protestants, the right-wing evangelicals, they're not going to vote for an apostate cultist like Mitt Romney. It is not going to happen. Now, I don't know who they're going to vote for. They probably won't vote. I have a feeling that the election coming, the presidential election, is going to produce a low turnout because across the country, because the right-wingers, especially the Christian right, they're not going to vote for a Mormon cultist. They won't do it. They simply will not do it. They'll either stay, not vote, or they'll, you know, somebody will whisper in their ear, listen, Barack Obama is a pretty good capitalist, and he's really made things kind of slick for us tax cheats. So, and he doesn't prosecute anybody, no matter what crime we commit. So let's just keep him around another 4 years. But Romney is not going to be president. Okay? So, Tom, you need to relax about that one. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate you checking in. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. If you aren't